Welcome to Social Media Know-How, the podcast featuring the greatest minds and brands in the world of social and digital marketing. And now, your host, founder and CEO of Link Humans, Jorgen Sundberg.
Hey, sons, Vaysan, how is it going? Many thanks for tuning into Social Media Know-How, the Link Humans podcast. I'm your host, Jorgen Sundberg, and this here podcast is here to discuss the ins and outs of social media. And as always, I'm coming to you from Link Humans Global Towers in a fairly mild London. It's the final week of May 2016, and yes, we have now moved office to Camden Town. We are less than a minute away from the Camden Markets, and I actually took a little lunchtime stroll into one of them just a couple of hours ago, and I felt like I was on another planet. You'll find any type of food you could ever imagine in there, any type of item. If you're looking for trainers or sunglasses or hats or T-shirts, whatever, you can find it at the Camden Markets. In terms of food, I saw lots of international cuisine there, which I'm dying to try out. But I thought for the first day, I'm going to play it safe. So I went for a wrap at Pret-a-Manger. Just a little soft start on the first day of Camden. But I will update you on our adventures and the upcoming weeks here in Camden Town. If you want real-time updates, have a look at the Life at Link Humans hashtag, of course. Right, so I'm very excited about today's show. I'm going to be joined by Ed Turpening of Altimeter Group, or Altimeter Group, as we say in the British vernacular. And we're going to talk all about that favorite topic of this podcast. Yes, you guessed it, employee advocacy. So more on that after our tip of the week. So this week's tip isn't actually a tool, an app, or a technology. It's a piece of content written by Ben Donker. We published this today on the Link Humans blog, and it's titled A Kickstart Guide to Corporate Hashtags. Yeah, does your company or brand have a hashtag to project culture, behind the scenes content, and what it's like to work for your organization? In this very exhaustive piece, Ben examines what corporate hashtags are. He looks at a few examples, such as Starbucks to be a partner mission hashtag, Kohl's daily brand hashtag, Twitter's own hashtags for multiple courses, and it gives some really solid steps to creating your own corporate hashtag. So I would recommend checking that out. It's on the Link Humans blog, so linkhumans.com/blog/corporate-hashtags-guide. Now there will be a link in the show notes, so that might be the easier way to find it, or just Google it. Okay, that was that. It's now time to patch in Silicon Valley and roll this week's expert interview.
Ed Turpening, how are you doing?
I'm good, Jorgen. How are you?
Very good, thanks. Tell us about Altimeter Group and what you do there.
Well, Altimeter Group is a research-based advisory firm. So we're a group of industry analysts. We focus on technology disruption and how it impacts business. So things like big data, social media, digital transformation, mobile, that sort of thing. So I conduct research in this area. I talk to brands just about every day about what they're doing to try to learn from them. And then we field surveys and have other research mechanisms. So that's what we do. And after our research, we also consult with companies as well and help them achieve their objectives and deal with disruption.
Yeah, absolutely. And tell us about this piece of research that you recently published. It's called Social Media Employee Advocacy, Tapping into the Power of an Engaged Workforce.
Yeah, so last year, every year we conduct a benchmark of what's happening in terms of social business. So, and we define social business as basically the application of social media within a business. And in these annual benchmarks, we ask, how mature are you in service, in service and support, in marketing, in recruiting, all the different ways you can use social. And one of the areas that really popped out as a growth area was employee advocacy, which for years, which was kind of sort of down, way down the list of priorities of strategists. And we saw a huge jump, 191% jump just between 2013 and 2015. And actually in the research we'll talk about today, we saw a further jump. So now we're seeing that 90% of brands are either piloting, mature in their use of employee advocacy, or they're considering it. So so we just thought it was a very interesting area to look at, because one of the things that I know, you know, that we all have to deal with technology disruption is this idea of a bright, shiny object. So it's this overhyped idea that might have, but they may not meet expectations. And so I wanted to study that because I wanted to make sure that our readers and the brands we work with understood that, you know, this is not a be-all, end-all, that there are some obstacles and to understand this disruption realistically.
Okay, great. And if we look at business outcomes, what outcomes do brands expect when they invest in employee advocacy?
Yeah, there are three that we looked at. And they're basically the most popular was engaging customers. Mm-hmm. So 45% of brands said, we're doing this because we want our employees to engage with customers through further reach, through answering questions, perhaps, by getting more brand page followers, by getting product ideas and feedback, so that sort of thing. So that was the first. The other was engaging their own employees. You know, there's actually, you know, if you look at the research on how engaged or disengaged employees are today, the numbers are pretty dismal. So there are very few, you know, there's a very small percentage of employees that report that they're truly engaged in their work. And so what we found is that many brands using employee advocacy is actually a way to just inform their employees about what's going on within the company. So engaging customers was the second most popular response. And then the third was a direct financial return. So this is this would include social selling, for example, you know, looking for an ROI in terms of campaigns and product offers that might go through employees, that sort of thing. So in summary, it was those three areas that brands are focused on.
So you say social selling is part of employee advocacy?
Yes, it is. It's kind of a subset of it. And Charlene Lee, our principal analyst is looking at social selling as well, because especially on the B2B side, you know, if you think about social, it's all about relationship building. And that direct connection that a salesperson can make to a possible client or a prospect is really important. And it's shifting away from, you know, golf games to LinkedIn and other social and online platforms. So it is a subset of that. It's a little different, obviously, but it is part of the mix.
Okay, great. So employee advocacy, so we're getting your employees of the organization to post good things about the company. So how do employee posts compare to advertising? So if you do social advertising in terms of consumer action and cost?
Yeah, it's pretty striking. I mean, what we found was that the click-through rates, for example, on social posts are extremely high. So, you know, for example, you know, consumers reported that they like a post 21% of the time, so clicking like. They've shared a post about 13% of the time. They've commented on a post 10%, and they've shared it. Or actually LinkedIn, I should say, linked from the post, the social post that the employee posts, to the website of the brand. And that came out at 8%. So if you look at an 8% click-through rate on, you know, you would never get that in an ad. I mean, even in a social ad, the highest rates we see, or the rates range between 1.4% and 3%, at least on Facebook. So to get an 8% click-through rate is just, you know, is pretty astounding. So I think, you know, a lot of folks are looking at these numbers. Now, the question I'm concerned about as well, long-term, is that if employee advocacy becomes very, very widespread, consumers might start to tune out these posts just as they do ads. Over time. So we'll see. I mean, we're early in the process, but so far the results that consumers have told us that they like, share, that they click into the brand's website are very, very encouraging.
Yeah, and I think that's very true about the tuning out. And I've already seen people from the same organization sharing the same thing, perhaps over the course of 2 days, but it's almost the exact same updates. I wonder how long it will take before big platforms like Facebook or LinkedIn, when they will turn off APIs and they will realize that someone is getting a freebie here without actually paying for the advertising.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, I wrote a blog post about this last month, I believe, saying that, eventually, so as you know, as you may know, and your readers, your listeners may know, only about 3% of brand posts make it through the organic news feed today, because they're limiting those posts in order to prop up advertising. Over time, if employee advocacy grows at the rate that we think it may, they're going to have to take action, because it's going to start eating into their advertising revenue. And that'll be a very interesting process, won't it? Because now they have to sort of determine, well, is this post a brand shill post, or is it, you know, an authentic post from a person that happens to work at brand X? So I think it'll be very interesting to see how the platforms respond. You look at Twitter now, and they're instituting a algorithm-based feed as well, Instagram. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these platforms are going towards these algorithm-based feeds, because they do want to control the experience and have advertising appear in their feeds.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there. Now, if we try to get our employees to advocate and to share things, but what's the benefit to them? What motivates employees to advocate?
Yeah, there are three things that we looked at. We looked at direct benefit to the employee themselves. We looked at what benefits the brand, and then we looked for shared benefits. And thankfully, and I think good news for brands, is that the shared benefits were the most popular motivators among employees. So, for example, the most important that came up in our research was, I believe my employer's mission and want to promote what they do. So 57% of employees said that that's why they share content. The second most popular was, I believe in our products and want to share my experience. So I what's interesting, though, too, I have to say, is that when we look at the research and who's actually advocating, it's 77% are manager and above. So they're more engaged in the brand, and so they look for these kinds of shared benefits. What I think will be interesting over time is when you get individual contributors doing this more than they are today. I mean, only 23% of individual contributors are sharing any kind of content about work. And obviously, they make up the vast majority of the workforce. So I think the motivators might shift a little bit over time, but these are the kinds of motivators that we're seeing.
All right, great. And I'm sure some employees will have concerns about sharing things about their company, maybe to their friends and family. They may not feel that it's the right audience and so on. How can you address these concerns? And also, how can you scale this advocacy?
Yeah. So first of all, addressing their concern, one of the interesting findings that we had was that those that are advocating on Facebook, almost 2.5 times more than they are LinkedIn.
Wow.
I think that means that there's a challenge for LinkedIn. They have to somehow find a way to get more employees to talk about work and not just go to the site for job connections or news or that sort of thing. So the number one barrier that employees noted, when we asked, if you don't share, why don't you share, was they want to keep professional and personal lives separate. So obviously, if they shift their thinking and they start posting on LinkedIn, then they have that kind of separation that they want. And actually, the separation between work life and personal life was most strong in Europe, a big difference. I mean, almost twice as many European employees believe that they want to keep, work life and personal life separate than do North Americans. So it's certainly a challenge. In terms of how this scales, I think it's going to take time. One of the, you know, the brands that we spoke to that are very, very mature in this space, it took them between 5 and 7 years to get there. And the reason that it took them so long are multiple. One of them is content. So you have to have the right content for the right employee at the right time. So if you're a large, complex business, you don't want to, your accountants should have one stream of content that's appropriate to the accounting world or to their world of finance, versus perhaps your salespeople versus, product developers or security professionals or whatever the role might be. So, that's one thing that I think is slowing down brands, is just getting the right content to the right employee at the right time. And then deciding how much of that content that is shared is created by the brand and how much of it is curated from news sources. That's also a mix that they have to think about. And then the third area that I found, so the brands that are most mature at this, they actually integrate sharing of content within their internal social networks. In fact, it was astounding to us. We found that 80% of those who actually also happen to use internal social networks at work. So whether it's Facebook at work, which as you know is in testing right now, or Yammer or other internal facing kind of social experiences, we found a very high correlation between those folks that share internally and those that share externally. So that's kind of the journey we're seeing among the mature brands. They really think about and they get a content engine in place. They start to integrate sharing as a natural part of their daily work life. And if they use an internal social network to collaborate among employees, to share information, that's the natural place for them to share externally as well, rather than having a separate process or a separate tool in place.
So an example of that would be, if they use an internal LinkedIn mm-hmm. group or a Facebook group, and then they would also share publicly on those platforms?
It could be the scenario, though, that we see most often is using an internal social network like IBM Connections mm-hmm. or Lithium or Jive. So when I say internal social network, it's almost a replacement for, the intranets of the 90s. So rather than having SharePoint and Outlook and that sort of thing, brands like TD Bank and AT&T and IBM, they really focus on the next generation of communications, which is social, which is collaboration via social-like tools. So that's where we see a lot of the success is the companies that have invested in these kinds of internal platforms.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I remember Charlene was actually on this podcast about 3 months ago, and she said for digital leaders, leaders that want to be digital and want to lead online, the internal social networks is normally the best place to start and then take it externally.
Yeah. And it's not easy, by the way. I mean, that transition to an internal social network is difficult because you have to train and you have to shift people's mindset away from email and traditional file sharing techniques to something different. So it takes that's also something that takes a lot of time. So I'm sure Charlene probably mentioned that.
Yeah, for sure. Right. So just looking at this graph here about what employees actually share, the most common types of posts. And surprisingly, job postings is up there. It's number one, along with daily workplace life.
Yeah.
Don't people get enough of job postings from recruiters and HR people already?
yeah, I don't know. This is what consumers told us, though. So, it's interesting. Job postings are popular because it shows the employees' connections, what the opportunities are in the brand and the kinds of the culture of the brand, that sort of thing. I'm not sure. I think it's probably because it's very utilitarian. So it has utility. So if you are looking for a job or thinking about a new job, you do want to see those kinds of posts. And you also might want to work in the same company your friend works in, right? Just so you have a colleague right away that you can relate to. But yeah, it was a bit of a surprising finding. But it's interesting. Companies like Adobe, for example, with their Adobe Life, hashtag Adobe Life program, they've seen really tremendous success with this. And so companies that have, you know, there are in a particularly competitive environment, and you know, I'm talking to you today from Silicon Valley, where you know, the fight for engineers is fierce among Apple and even LinkedIn and Facebook and all the other technology platforms that are here. So from their standpoint, the employment brand and what it means to work at an employer is actually a pretty important part of their strategy for employee advocacy.
Okay. And if we look at where these employees share on what platforms, one that's, well, I think you mentioned it already, but it really sticks out here. Facebook is used by 86% of respondents there.
Yeah. And I think that reflects the fact that there's still a pretty small percentage of employees who are using formalized sharing programs, who are, you know, using a tool that's provided by their employer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I can tell you, for example, I'm using a tool like that. I'm using VoiceStorm, and I don't even have an option to share something on Facebook. The options I have are LinkedIn and Twitter because they're more business focused. So I think when you look at the Facebook numbers, which is, you know, 86% of employees said that they share there. I think that's more of the organic sharing. So it's sharing, you know, daily posts about work and what it's like to what they're doing at work, events, that sort of thing. So I think that's probably why it's so much higher. I think once more formalized tools are in place, you may see a jump in LinkedIn as one of the platforms. But also, as I said, I think LinkedIn, I think they have an opportunity here. They need to really highlight more so than they do today incentives for their users to post about work on their own platform. I think that's something they need to do more of. And obviously they have published posts and they have short updates. They have they do have those tools available, but clearly based on our research, they're just not nearly as popular as other platforms, including Twitter.
Yeah, that's surprising. So Twitter is number two, then LinkedIn, then Instagram. And then, Google Plus is even on there. And Pinterest, 16% of users are pinned on Pinterest, which is good for them.
Yeah, you know, and the kind of posts that we've seen on Pinterest are things like events, sponsorships, community involvement, sometimes products and that sort of thing, especially if they have a formalized program in place.
Right, and if we look at the profile of employee advocates, who are the leaders? Who are the people who are on the leaderboards? Is it the senior managers, or is it a grassroots operation?
Yeah, what we found is that 77% are actually manager and above. Uh-huh. and here's my theory on that, Jorgen, is that, you know, for years we've been telling employees not to post on social. So if you look at the average the template for the employee social media policy within companies, it almost always says, you know, don't tweet on behalf of, or don't post on behalf of the brand. Mm. Leave it to the professionals. So I think that you know, individual contributors still have quite a bit of fear and angst about posting this way, especially when there is no formalized program in place for them to do so. Managers and above, I think, feel like, you know, they better understand what the limits are, what the policies are, and, you know, they're also typically more engaged than the individual contributors. So I think that's all those things are sort of playing into this.
Right. Okay. So if we look at the people who actually consume these updates, so the consumers, so the friends and family or business contacts of employees, how do they view posts about work life?
Yeah, well, in general, first of all, one very interesting finding was that the vast majority of consumers that saw these posts didn't even think of them as employee advocacy posts. Uh-huh. And again, and it's probably, you know, and that's why I describe in the report that this is sort of the new native advertising of social, if you will. because it's very natural looking content. Now, again, a lot of these employees are posting outside of an official capacity. So that plays into it. But we found that, you know, again, the response rate from consumers was pretty high. You know, they find job postings useful. They find product promotions useful. They click through to these things. They find that they better understand the brand that their friend works for, which is always good for brand health, obviously. So the response was pretty good. I think the one area of caution was defriending. And we did find that 20% of consumers will defriend a connection based on post about work. And that actually jives with Pew Internet and some other studies that we looked at. And, you know, if you think about right now what's happening with, you know, at least in the U.S., we have a very contentious presidential election and a primary period where there are a lot of contentious posts about, you know, politics. And the defriending rates, based on what we saw with Pew Internet, for example, that research firm was very similar. So there is a downside here. And so, you know, I think it's important that employees know and realize that they and then brands know that when they give this content to an employee to share, it has to be very useful. And, you know, they can't go too far afield, or otherwise they're going to be defriended and they're going to diminish the power of their employees' social reach.
Yeah. Another thought just struck me now regarding native advertising. Will there be a point where when an employee does an update that was actually basically they were prompted by their organization, should that be stated somewhere saying this was recommended to me by IBM?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, AT&T is a good example. Even when someone in PR that tweets on behalf of the brand and they share information from the brand, they use hashtag AT&T EMP or employee, depending on how much room they have. And so, you know, what they're trying to do is obviously be transparent and identifying the fact that they are an employee, and also they want to meet the regulatory requirements, at least within the U.S. that requires that you know that if you have a relationship with an employer, or the employer is paying you in some way, that you have to disclose that. So absolutely, I think when it comes to native advertising in these kinds of posts, there's actually some room to grow, because we see plenty of posts where you have no idea that the employee works for the company, and you know, we may see some regulatory action in the years to come as this starts to grow and force brands to make that disclosure more obvious and transparent.
Yeah, we'll see where that leads.
Yeah,
you mentioned earlier about a difference between North Americans and European, well, both employees and consumers. Can you elaborate a little bit on that, please?
Sure. Yeah. So one of the questions we asked was, "I want my friends to better understand what I do at work," and so this was a question asked of employees. And you know, and it gets again to the motivation of why they share. So in North America, 49% agreed with that statement. They post because they want their friends to better understand their work life. And in Europe, that was only 29%. So I think it'd get back to, you know, Europeans tend to have higher standards for privacy than North Americans do. So employees don't feel like they need to share their work life, you know, on their social platforms. The other big disparity was we asked employees, are tools provided to you by your employer to share, or tools make it easier for me to share? And North Americans had double the response than Europeans. So North Americans are further along in employee advocacy and formalized employee advocacy programs, it appears, based on this data. But also, you know, I think the cultural differences are going to come to play. I don't know that we'll see employee advocacy pick up in the long term the way it has in cultural differences.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Well, I guess most of the leading providers of any technology, but employee advocacy technology in particular, are definitely American. There is one a European one, SMARP, which I'll ask you about in a minute. But I wanted to ask first the big million-dollar question is, of course, how do you measure return on investment?
Yeah. Well, you know, we're in the early stages. So if you remember, you know, 15 years ago or when a brand started investing in social, sometimes the objective is just to test and to learn. So to get an idea and measure what's actually happening. So because financial return showed up, you know, it was such a low priority among brands, we think that brands understand that and they see this as a phase just to learn. But some of the metrics that we did see, for example, website traffic, brands want to drive more referrals from social to their website. And we found that 55% of brands told us that that was one reason why they're investing in employee advocacy. Revenue impact was pretty low, is about 29%. Interestingly enough, only 11% of brands said that they wanted to invest in employee advocacy as a way to defer their cost in social advertising. I think that'll probably change over time as they start to see that their employees in aggregate have much greater reach than brand pages. So we might start to see some shifting there. Some brands look for customer service effectiveness, a pretty low percentage. But you know, interestingly, a quarter of our brands told us again that the return for them would be just more engaged employees. They're fine with a program like that simply meaning that they're engaged, their employees better understand their company, what they do, what their direction is. I'll give you one example. So there's a retailer that in the U.S. here, it's one of the largest retailers that I don't know if I can name in this call.
Try.
But, yeah, unfortunately I can't, but they were going through some tough times. And so they launched an employee advocacy tool because, you know, the vast majority of their employees, we're looking at, you know, 200,000 or 300,000 employees. They don't sit in a desk or have a PC that they use regularly. So they don't get it's a challenge to communicate to those employees. So they actually distributed an employee advocacy tool, made it available on their personal mobile devices. And they use that as a way to feed information about what the CEO is thinking about, you know, direction. And this is all public in terms of the information fed to employees. It's obviously public, anything that, you know, something that is publicly consumable. So over time, they found that the employees wanted to share this. And so they started to share it. So it's interesting that, you know, in that case, the use case and the benefit that the brand was looking for was, again, engaging employees more deeply. And then the side benefit to that was, okay, once they're more engaged, they'll start to share externally with their social graph and their social networks.
Okay, great. So in order to do all those things, let me flip this. How could you get it wrong? So if you want to achieve all these ROIs, what are the things you should be avoiding?
Yeah. So the first thing is expectations. So, avoid really, I've talked to some CMOs that think that, you know, they're going to get 50 to 100% of their employees sharing this content. Yeah. And that's just not realistic. I mean, even the most advanced brands that I've spoken to, 10 to 40% seems to be, you know, a reasonable range of employees participating. So that's the first thing that many brands do get wrong, is they just have the wrong expectations. And that's fine because, you know, this is a kind of a test and learn phase for this type of engagement. So that's not surprising. One of the others, of course, is, you know, are your employees ready? Are they motivated? Do they understand your brand well enough to represent it in social? You know, if you think back to the early phases of employee advocacy, they were actually ambassador programs.
Yes,
you know, we've had, Yeah, you know, they had trained certified PR professionals or even engineers or others that went through some heavy training in order to represent the brand. So I think that actually leads to one of the other things that you can get wrong is you can't just launch this and expect results. You have to have ongoing training. And really important is your manager has to recognize your achievement, you know, the fact that you are contributing. Employees do look for that. So you do need to have some sort of monitoring in place for this kind of work to see who is sharing, to see what they're sharing, and then to recognize them internally. So that's one thing that I think brands do get wrong is they don't realize that they need to give their employee some ongoing feedback and training. And of course, the other thing that they get wrong is content. They have to have the right content for the right person at the right time.
Yeah, which is can be a trick in itself for sure.
Absolutely.
Right. If we look at technology selection, you're using a technology. I think Dynamic Signal is probably the big one out there. There's Social Cores, Gagalamp, Smop, which is the European startup. What are some of the main considerations for organizations? And which technologies do you think look interesting at the moment?
Yeah. Well, so first of all, a lot of these point solutions we think are going to, over time, will start to integrate and be a natural part of an employee's internal communications experience. So on intranets, for example. So, I think that over time, these point solutions will start to dissolve or start to integrate into much bigger. Because, you know, if you think about it, if you already have an internal employee communications program in place, you really need to leverage that and not necessarily provide a separate tool. So I think over time, that'll start to happen. But some of the things to look for is, you know, obviously, you have to make it easy. So providing a tool that makes it easy for them. The technology should have metrics. So it should be able to tell the employee who takes the time to share, you know, what kind of impact they're having on the brand and how they're helping the brand. The tool should make it easy for employees to submit their own content. So in order for other employees to share. So there might be some original content that an employee creates themselves. That should be, you know, any kind of technology to support these kinds of measures should make it easy for them to do the same. So those are the kinds of things that we would recommend that brands look for.
So give it to me straight, Ed. What's the best piece of technology then?
Oh, you know, George, I can't really, you know, we have not done an in-depth analysis of that. So we're pretty neutral on that. I mean, we've looked at, I think we counted 40 or so brand tools that are doing this. So, you know, like any new technology, there'll be a shakeup, there'll be some mergers and acquisitions going on. There'll be, you know, some combining of tools, and we've actually seen some of that happen. So I think over the long term, there'll be some shifts and changes in tools. So if I were a brand right now, I would look at any tool that I acquire, you know, I would look at a 1 to 2 year horizon because there'll be changes in this environment. These tools are innovating very quickly. And they're integrating into, you know, tools and technologies like CRM systems, like Salesforce, and support systems like Zendesk, things like that. So I think over time, you know, if I were a brand, I would look at a short-term horizon for this and realize that longer term, you know, I might want to look at the market again because it's shifting and changing so quickly.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the big seismic shift that happened recently was a Dynamic Signal linking up with Edelman, which I think is an interesting move. Right. So what are some of the brands? We're not talking music. We're talking digital brands here. Who inspires you online, and what brands do you think have found success in employee advocacy?
Well, there are many brands that do a great job in social, but I think the brands that have done extremely well in employee advocacy. There are three I can talk about, Adobe, IBM, and AT&T. And they're all referenced in the report. I spoke to the heads of social for all of those brands or those that are involved in employee advocacy. You know, Adobe does just a stellar job in terms of recruiting, empowering employees through their Adobe Live program to talk about what it's like to work at the company, and to and really using that content as a way to draw engineers in and to draw in new candidates. So they've had some great success, and I think they do a tremendous job. IBM is in the similar camp, although where they excel is more on the thought leadership side. So if you look at IBM services, for example, you know, they do consulting around social media, social business, big data, you know, so they have a thought leadership challenge for their business, you know, as any business like that, like Accenture or Deloitte or KPMG, they need to help their employees build their personal brand online. I think IBM has done a great job of that. And AT&T has done a great job in a couple of areas. One is in public relations. So using social from a sort of a PR side and a public relations side. And then again, they've started also going more and more into the recruiting side, and they have a hashtag called AT&T Life, which is very interesting, very similar to obviously to Adobe Live. So those are three brands that I spoke to, and I think, you know, looking at them, they're doing a great job. One other brand I'll talk just briefly is TD Bank, and you know, they're based out of Canada. They have some, they also have presence here in the U.S. And they do a great job at internal social, as does the Home Depot, actually, by the way. So there are a couple of brands that are doing a tremendous job of engaging their employees internally. And actually, I would put IBM in that camp as well. It's not just an external success that they're seeing. They're seeing really tremendous success internally by using social platforms inside the company to collaborate and to communicate amongst employees. So those are the brands that are top of mind when I think about who's doing it right and who's having success.
Great. Thank you for that. Now, final question. Where can we learn more about yourself, Ed? Where can our listeners connect with you? And also, where can we download this report?
Yeah, so you can, probably the best way to connect with me is Twitter. So just follow me at Ed Terpening, E-D, T as in Tom, E-R, P as in P-E-N-I-N-G, Ed Terpening. And they can download the report from altimetergroup.com. So we have blogs from, you know, Brian Solis and Susan Ettlinger and Charlene Lee and our analysts. And there's also a page that lists all of our reports. And also I tweet quite a bit information about employee advocacy right now. And I tweet some of the numbers, and I always link to the report download from those tweets. So I think Twitter is probably the best bet.
Great. And we'll put a link in the article to this report as well. Great. Ed Terpening, many thanks for your time.
Oh, thank you, Eugene. It was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Right. So what do you think of the Europe versus North America divide in employee advocacy? I suppose privacy, if you like, is definitely more of a concern over here than it would be in the US. Just look at all these constant lawsuits that Google has to fight in the EU. And I think employee advocacy will take off in Europe, and some would argue it already has, but perhaps take a different route to our North American brethren, and probably be more separated from personal networks, so personal versus business networks. So which will probably benefit the likes of LinkedIn, Zing, VRDO, and those type of networks. So that's my thoughts. What do you think? Let me know. Ping me an email at jorgen@linkhumans.com and share your thoughts. And all the resources and the links and so on that Ed mentioned will, of course, be in the show notes article on linkhumans.com/podcast. Now, this week's big shout is going out to our gracious hosts here at Work.life, which is where we're now based in Camden Town. Check them out on Twitters. So it's work.life, as in the word dot, work.life. And, of course, they're on other places on social. Learn more about what they do and feel free to drop around to check out the premises and have a cup of coffee from a very fancy coffee machine. And, yeah, spend some time with us. Many thanks for tuning in, and I will catch you next week.
Thank you for listening to Social Media Know-How with your host, Jorgen Sundberg of Link Humans. For show notes and more, go to linkhumans.com/podcast and check out the hashtag SMKnowHow.
If I were to have a motto or a piece of wisdom to share, is that a lot of brands get paralyzed in social because there are a lot of, obviously you have to have a lot of caution when it comes to social, but I think that the brands that are fearless, that start small and that grow are the ones that succeed. So when it comes to social, have no fear, realize that you've got to get started somewhere and don't be paralyzed when it comes to new programs like this.